So welcome back. It is fun to sit back and listen to the radio and get smarter while you do so. But don't you wish sometimes, don't you wish, do you ever fantasize, do you ever perhaps imagine that you could just transfer information into your mind as easily as you sync music to an iPod? Or vice versa? Wouldn't it be great to have a backup of everything you ever knew? Every memory you ever had? Every person you ever met? Maybe in a digital format so you could search and cross-index it. All that without having, like, Google Glasses. I wonder how close we are to being able to do all that, and I'm pleased to be joined by a man who does more than wonder about it. He researches and writes about such things. He's written a novel. He had an article published recently on the Huffington Post. He's widely read. Let's pick his brain now, the old-fashioned way, by talking. Mark McClelland, welcome to Maritime Morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm feeling all right. I sometimes wish that I could have a computer do the show when I'm feeling too tired by letting it know everything I know and then letting it do the show. How close are we to being able to transfer everything that's in our heads into a computer?
That's a question that a lot of people are talking about. Ray Kurzweil is an authority in the area. He's a fairly well-regarded futurist. He puts it out at perhaps 2070, which is less than 60 years away, something that people, young people today could potentially see in their lifetime.
How would that even happen? Is the technology there but not good enough, or is the technology still entirely imaginary?
Elements of the technology are still imaginary, but they're sort of projections of trends that we've already seen. There are kind of two problems that you have to solve. One is having the computer hardware necessary to house something as complex as a human brain, which is certainly currently something we can't model in an actual computer.
Okay.
And then the other half is getting at the contents of our brains, essentially. And there are two projects that's recently been announced in Europe called the Human Brain Project, which strives over the next 10 years to simulate an entire human brain on a computer.
Hmm.
And then the other that was recently announced in the U.S. is the Brain Activity Map Project, which is all about better understanding our brains as they are now and being able to get at what's going on a little bit better than we currently can.
I seem to recall seeing something not that long ago that somebody was able to read what people were seeing in a way.
Yeah, there's been some really fascinating advancements already in live monitoring of brain activity. It's fairly crude stuff right now, but it points to the potential to have a much finer grained picture of what's going on in the brain.
Well, when we consider, say, even 15 years ago, what a digital camera was able to produce, or 30 years ago, what a TV camera was able to produce, versus what we have now.
Yeah.
You can only imagine that what we're seeing now with brain scanning versus what we'll have in 30 years. Imagine that kind of trajectory.
Oh, absolutely. The rate of discovery has just been tremendous.
So in terms of technology, let's go through each of these problems here. One, the hardware to model a human brain. What do we have and what do we need?
So we really need a basic model for computing that's a little bit different than what we have now. The brain is a massively parallel computer in a sense. It has trillions, hundreds of trillions of connections among the neurons that make up the brain. Using computers as they are now, it would take a tremendous array of supercomputers to achieve that degree of connectivity and parallel computing.
Now, let's just brief, because we don't have necessarily a computer science engineer audience.
Sure.
We got people in their car driving on their way to pick up bacon.
Sure.
parallel typically computers work by doing one or two things each cycle, I guess, and going through many, many cycles very quickly.
Exactly.
Whereas our brain has a bunch of stuff going on all at the same time. It's not as though it does one thing each time it goes around. It is doing all the stuff together all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, and, have, am I summing that up right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a new area of computing research that's called neuromorphological computing. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that we want to design computer hardware that's fundamentally much closer to what we have in our brain. And that could potentially enable brain stimulation and some understanding of human consciousness that we've never had.
So eventually we'll have to have computers that are able to process, independently yet connectedly.
Yep.
Because in our brains we have what we traditionally think of as different parts of the brain, although scientists are finding through neuroplasticity that multiple parts of the brain can adapt to do other things. But we think we have a visual center and the regulatory centers and auditory centers and memory and all that kind of thing. Those all need pathways to be able to talk to each other while they're doing their independent things. And so far, that kind of stuff is not easy to do on a computer.
No, it's not. It's just a lot of stuff going on at once. And that's, computers today really are, built around sequential activity, basically.
Yeah, they're really, really good yes and no machines. They're good. Yep. They're good logic machines. They're great adding machines. And most of the stuff we've been able to do with computers is exploiting all that stuff through programming.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Okay, so the second part is getting at the content of our brains. Usually the way we've done it so far is by entering it in, by having the stuff in our brains get translated through our speech or our gestures or our fingers by typing, entering that as data in a computer and then being filtered through a program. That seems completely inefficient. There's too many steps in there.
Yeah, it would be ideal if you could just interface directly with a computer somehow. And there have been some experiments already that demonstrate the ability of, there are people who have various handicaps who are able to use brain signal to drive hardware outside of their body. So you can just drive a robotic limb potentially, by thinking. And this is stuff that, we're already starting to figure out how to do. The potential over the next 50 years is tremendous. So the idea is that, as we get a finer and finer grained picture of what the brain is doing, could we take a snapshot of it and move all of the connections and what makes up our memories and what makes our personality, could that be moved into a computer-based platform, which is essentially processing information the same way our brain does now, but on a platform that we've engineered, then we could then potentially enhance.
Are you familiar with the work of Steve Mann?
No, I'm not. I've heard the name, but I don't know his work.
He's a cyborg, basically.
Okay.
He's a Canadian guy, born 1962 in Hamilton, Ontario, and he has degrees from MIT, McMaster, and basically he's been wearing a camera that is built into his skull for years.
Mm-hmm.
You might have heard him in the news last July. He got beat up at a McDonald's.
Okay, yeah.
In France because he wouldn't take off his computer camera. And he can't take it off because it's screwed into his head.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been doing pioneering work for years in terms of wearable computing and the crossover between computers and people and letting computers and imaging devices see everything that we see. I wonder, what do you think of the idea of rather than taking everything that's in our head that's there, just having the computer learn along with us, see everything that we see, feel things we feel, and let it make its own recording?
That's a neat idea. There's a lot that, seeing what we see does not equate to feeling what we feel.
True.
And I think that we would have to have a much deeper, contact with what's actually happening. It's like, could you take the writings of a writer, take what they wrote throughout their course, the entire life, and turn that into the writer, through some sort of analysis process? I don't think you could.
Actually, we had somebody on the show a few weeks ago who's doing that with Twitter.
Oh, really?
They're going to be tweeting after the grave. They'll set up a parallel account to yours, and over time they will analyze what you tweet, how you tweet, the words you use, the syntax that you prefer, the sites that you reference. And then after you die, somebody you know will have the password, and after you die, you will activate this parallel Twitter account that will then tweet as you after you're dead.
Huh.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is.
Because that would be interesting, you know, if, say, Stephen King dies one day, which he will, it'd be interesting if a computer could just keep generating new Stephen King books.
Yeah, you know, to me, that's a ways off, but the potential is there if you can kind of get at the guts of how his imagination works.
Well, yes, because it's not just knowing what he knows, is it? There's the intangibles, like imagination.
Oh, absolutely.
Hope, love, fear.
Yeah.
I don't know if we don't have a computer model for that.
No. I mean, we have rough models for some of it, but you really would have to come up with a way to transform the deep contents of your brain and what makes up your personality if you were going to pull this off and get a copy that actually looks and behaves like you do.
So we're this close now to talking about some of the more philosophical stuff. Mark, can you stand by and we'll tackle some of that in a moment?
Sure, absolutely.
Mark McClelland, author of a book called Upload. Is that the name of the book? Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't even have it on my screen. Luckily, the computer knows it.
Yep.
We'll talk with Mark McClelland more in just a moment on Maritime Morning. AM on the 21st of April. It is a Sunday morning, and we're talking big thoughts here. It's nice to have a computer program that'll do your taxes. Computers have done that for years. It's nice to have a computer program that will tell you when to make a left turn to go into the superstore so you can buy some bacon. Computers have been able to do that for a while now. You can do that on your phone. But could a computer make a complete duplicate of everything you know and then live on as you after you're gone? No, not yet. Maybe one day, but should we? And would you if you could? Let's talk to Mark McClelland, author of Upload. What's your book about, sir? I mean, it's people like you who probably push the boundaries of what we could do by imagining bigger things.
Upload is a near-future science fiction novel. And it's about the first person to upload his consciousness into a computer. It's set in the 2060s at a time when researchers have successfully uploaded animals, and they're on the verge of being able to upload humans. The main character, Raymond Kwan, works as a software developer on the Human Mind Upload Project. He's a young man with a troubled past, but he also has a scheme to escape his past, his hacker crimes of his youth, and start a new life. He thinks that he can upload himself, make it look like it failed, and then whisk himself off to a digital utopia, spending the rest of his essentially immortal life in his own virtual world.
Is this partly autobiographical, Mark? do you have hacker crimes in your youth?
Actually, I'm happy to say that I do not.
Aww! You could have had so much fun in your youth being a hacker.
Yeah.
Some people have to wait until they're a grown-up to be a hacker. I'm guessing, like many science fiction or science fantasy projects, things don't turn out as the character expected, and there are unforeseen consequences.
Absolutely. So he's actually falling in love, as he's nearing this point where he kind of has to upload to get away from his past. So he's falling in love, and he's developing attachments to the real world that he's never had before, and he's starting to have some second thoughts about uploading. Now he's invested in the reality that that we all know and love, and he's been somewhat detached from, and he's starting to realize what he would be giving up if he kind of leaves the real world and moves into a virtual space.
So having considered all this then, Mark, I'm wondering if you had the opportunity now to make a digital copy of your brain, which doesn't necessarily mean that you have to turn your real life one off, would you? Would you take that opportunity to upload everything you've ever known to another machine?
I would. I definitely would. To me, the most exciting part of this is that there's the potential, if you can move human thought, human consciousness into a computer that we've engineered, you have the potential then to tweak aspects of it that maybe you're not so happy with right now. There are base instincts that amplify our greed and vanity, and, potentially you could tone those down a little bit and make yourself a better person.
Okay, let's see if I'm imagining this right then. So I download or upload, whatever. I make a copy of my brain, and I can run it on a computer, sort of like a virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
Then, now that there's another copy of me running on a machine, I can tweak the code. I can adjust it. Maybe run some tests on it. Maybe run some beta tests. Run it through some experiments that say, can I make a better Scott? Can I make a Scott that maybe is a bit more self-controlled, doesn't eat as much, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then I could treat my... Would I need to then be able to treat my brain like a flash drive, like do a firmware upgrade, wipe my brain and then put this other Scott in there?
Probably.
That would be neat.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how I picture it working. And, there the number of things that you could change is really just a question of your imagination. Your memory could be much improved, various... You could potentially just think faster. That's one thing. You could potentially live and do more in the same amount of time if you could just make the computer run faster.
I could offload all my worries onto my second brain.
Yep.
I could say, hey, second brain, digital brain, you do all the anxiety stuff. I'll just do the fun stuff.
Although that raises an interesting ethical question.
Does it?
Shouldn't the computer version of you have the same rights and considerations as the biological version of you?
I'm going to quickly say no, but I'm not an ethicist. I made it.
Uh-huh.
It's a computer.
Yep.
But if it's self-aware, then yeah, it might protest and then say, I'm not going to let you do that, Dave.
Yep. I mean, there are some sort of godlike attributes of making... something that is essentially a computer-based life form.
Well, I had a Tamagotchi once, and it died.
Yeah. Happily, that was a pretty simple simulation.
Yes, it was. It's the equivalent of having, a single-celled life form, I suppose.
Yep.
There are so many other ethical considerations, too. Like, should we even do this? I mean, one question you write in your news release here: are we at risk of devaluing humanness? Mm-hmm. If we can just make a copy of ourselves, does that reduce our value to that of just another computer?
Right. And like you said, why wouldn't you conduct an experiment on that copy?
Mm-hmm.
Because in theory, if something goes wrong, you can just roll back to your last backup and you're back where you started. But at the same time, what have you put that computer-based life form through in the process?
And when you shut it off, is it really gone?
Yeah.
It would be neat, though. You could, leave a copy of yourself to visit with generations of the future. How many of us have wished that we could speak with grandparents or other even older than that, relatives who aren't around anymore? If you could just log in somewhere and visit with grandma.
Which raises one of the... the great opportunities of this concept is, you don't, currently we lose the wisdom of generations, as generations die out and new ones are born. And you could, with a much longer lifespan, you could have somebody who survives across them and have the benefits of all their experience.
The more I think about this, and I deliberately didn't overthink this before we did the segment today, Mark, mm-hmm. is you could do a weekly show about this. There's so much to think about, because I'm thinking of, in a case of something that was in the news this week, the bombings in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
If we could download people's brains, you could find an eyewitness, just plug them in, download their information as the same way they did with all the security cameras that were in the area, and have eyewitnesses.
Yeah, that's true.
You could do the same thing with the bombers. We wouldn't need to tell whether people were guilty or innocent based on their plea anymore. We could just get a court order to download their brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then I imagine there's
what they were thinking about.
There's even more ethical considerations.
Yeah, not only would you know if they did it, but you would know why.
Sure, if we could decode that.
Yeah.
Although maybe they have faulty firmware. Maybe they have bugs in their brain code that we haven't. There's so many career opportunities in there for.
Yep. Or maybe they were hacked.
Maybe they were hacked. We're making up. Mark, we have 5 or 6 great science fiction novels that we've just come up with here on the spot.
Yeah, it's rich fodder.
So where can people read your book then?
It's available at most major booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBookstore. You can also use indiebound.org to find the book at an independent bookstore near you. And you know, people can learn more about the book at uploadthenovel.com.
And what's your day job, Mark McClellan?
I'm a software developer.
What kind of software do you develop?
Through my career, it's been a range of stuff. I worked for quite a few years on a group chat application, which was used by large banks in place of email for internal communication.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm working at a trading firm, and I'm actually in the finance department. So I'm automating all of the finance-related work that comes with massive amounts of trading.
Have you been able to automate, say, do a computer version of Warren Buffett?
That would be a very valuable program.
Yeah, get working on it.
Yep.
you can program yourself out of needing to work.
I would like that.
Mark McClelland, I appreciate you being on the show. It's always nice to imagine a future and along with that, imagine the potholes in that road to the future, too.
Thanks so much for having me. It's
Mark, good luck to you and your work. Mark McClelland is an author and imagineer in the USA.